What is up, everybody? Welcome into another episode of Crossing Broadcast, a thirsty Thursday, a great day to be a sports fan wherever you are, because it is the start of March Madness and the full Thursday slate, unless you're one of those weirdos who thinks that the tournament actually starts on Tuesday or Wednesday night with the play-in games, you know, the field of 68 and all that. You know, as far as I'm concerned, this is the legitimate start of March Madness. So I'm going to get my quad box going. I'm going to get the four screens going on the 85-inch TV. We're going to get the laptop going. We're going to get the phone at the same time. We're going to do some Pennsylvania online sports betting, legal online sports betting as well. A great day for that. A great day for Philadelphia sports because we have a lot to talk about. We got March Madness. Obviously, we have the John Tortorella benching of Sean Couturier Coots and shutting down Anthony San Francisco for, I think, the fourth time now. I'm starting to lose track. I think it's 1, 2, 3, 4. Yes, he's now shut him down 4 times. The Phillies are joining Comcast in their bid to redevelop the sports complex. We have Mikey Mist possibly going back to 97.5 The Fanatic and a new lineup. We're going to do a fun Phillies division hypothetical. Should the Eagles trade Hassan Reddick? Wayne Simmons is retiring as a Flyer. Did the disgusting Pittsburgh media smear Kenny Pickett and his small hands on the way out the door? And we'll talk a little bit about Saquon, too. A lot to get to. So without further ado, let me introduce my co-host for today. You know him from 92.9 FM, The Sack, and the Let's Go to the Phones program. Welcome back, Coggin Toboggan, to the show.
Kevin, what's going on, bud?
What's up, man? Are you excited for March Madness? Who's up first today? We got
Michigan State, right?
Yeah. Are you got money on Tom Izzo here?
I've bet against Michigan State far too much in the tournament in my times of filling out brackets. So I decided to reverse course and put a little money on Michigan State today, which means that you should absolutely fade me immediately.
It's like one where you kind of like you get in your head so much that you're like, well, Michigan State normally is pretty good and they never lose in the first round, but you know, they, because that's always the case, you know, maybe I'll lean the other way, and then you start like getting inside your own head and then you're fading yourself, and then you're like, well, should I just like go with the obvious here and pick them to win? But Michigan State's 19-14 this year.
That's right.
Mississippi State, that, I don't like, know,
I was saying, I've seen that like all of the money is being placed on Michigan State. So that's also something you always want. You always want to be on the side of the public when like 99% of the public money is going to Michigan State. Because as we all know, the public always knows more about a game than the book does, right?
This is my favorite time of the year because it's every sports expert, you know, in Philadelphia, like the Northeast, non-college, they don't do a lot of college basketball. They haven't watched fuck all of college basketball all year long. And all of a sudden they're like, yeah, I like Creighton, you know, to get out of the Midwest region or whatever. I'm like, dude, you didn't watch a single minute of Creighton this year. We all got to do our picks and act like we know we're talking about. For once, I just want somebody to say, like, I don't know anything about any of these teams, and I'm not going to bet any of them. And to that, I would say kudos to you, because otherwise who are you like Obama, you know, you do your bracket every year, and I don't think Obama gets any right. Doesn't he have like historically the worst brackets of all time? I say this as an independent too, it's not a political commentary.
I'll admit it, I don't know anything about these teams. This is how my lizard brain works with March Madness. Like I'll watch a couple games during the season. I'm not like an ardent watcher of college basketball, but I'll see a random game on like a Saturday afternoon and watch it. But I'm not taking in any information on it. I'm just like, oh, Alabama beat, you know, Iowa, wow, great. And then what happens is Selection Sunday, I'll hear some random analyst be like, oh, I really like
Marquette. I'm all over BYU.
Yeah. And then like that'll get in my brain and I'll be like, oh, I got it. I love Marquette this year. I absolutely love it. And I haven't watched a second of them play. So it's just like, that's just how it works for me every year. And I can't, and it's not going to stop me. It didn't stop me from filling out two brackets and wagering money on the first game. And of course, it's not going to stop me. When does it ever stop me doing that stuff?
Well, let's bring in somebody who actually does know a lot about this space, unlike us. Let's bring on our guest today. It's Eitan Shander, who looks like he's driving his car. Where are you going, man?
Driving his car.
I'm heading home. So I was down in Chickies in South Philly. I did a quick little by the way, can I just say that I am super thrilled that I am not the only person on this show with a gray beard. And I feel like you guys have both made me so at home right now. Yes, thank you.
Yeah, but see, like, Eitan, listen, yours is in like a cool pattern. You got it kind of going off like this. And mine is like right in the center. So I just like, I have gray in the goatee area. And then I look like just a washed dad everywhere else, you know?
I mean, I got to be honest. And I know that's Coggins' hair. So it's not like, you know, he didn't shower or anything today. But you look really well put together, Kincaid. Maybe you just showered for the show.
I have to be honest. I was a little disheveled. I had to like get a couple stories up real quick, and I was like, let me just jump in the shower real quick here. I didn't do my hair. I got the Motorhead shirt. It's kind of getting loose in the neck here, you know, because I think I've worn it so much now. I got the Motorhead and the Motorhead over my back too. I think that's overkill, man. I don't like that.
I'm gonna a lot of Motorhead, man.
Like, yeah,
maybe you had Moorhead on the mind, like Moorhead State.
Moorhead State, yeah. Well, yeah. I think it's a violation when dudes. I think it's like super corny when a guy shows up wearing like a. I don't double dip on my sports apparel. If I'm wearing like a West Virginia T-shirt, I'm not gonna wear the West Virginia hat, or I'm not gonna wear like a Phillies T-shirt and like a Sixers hat. I just think it's like the only guy who can pull that off is like Monty G. You know, or like you're a Philadelphia sports fan, Jamie, the guy who paints his face or something like, right. But I think I look like kind of a dipshit now because I forgot the Motorhead was hanging over my left shoulder. And now I got it here. But yeah. No, I appreciate the comments. The nicest thing that anybody said to me in a long time, you know,
I figure.
But listen, you know, look, man, you're in the gambling space, the gambling world. I mean, the sector, give me your Mount Rushmore of synonyms for space. Yeah. You know? I don't know what. So, what does Eitan do on the first Thursday of March Madness?
Well, it's the first Thursday of March Madness to where my 2.5-year-old son is actually like able to sit down and watch. I don't know, maybe like 90 minutes of something on TV. So, I'm really hoping as I'm making my way back to the house now that I'm not going to hear like 20 minutes into this Michigan State game. Can you put on Paw Patrol, please?
Yeah.
Because that's going to ruin. And like, I shouldn't have to go down to the basement and be banished in my own house where I'm the one paying the freaking bills here in the first place so that this kid can go out and have all the food and drinks he wants. I shouldn't have to be down in the basement, relegated down in the basement like some dog shit EPL team that can't play next year. Like, that shouldn't be me, but Kevin, to answer your question, I'm most likely going to be in the basement for the next 6 hours with a television, laptop, and phone, and just hoping that my wife doesn't ask me to do like 50 things for my kids.
Well,
I'm a terrible dad.
I have disappointing news for you, man, because you are the Nottingham Forest of fatherhood for the next 5 years at least, because you are not going to be watching. The only two things you're going to be watching on your main TV are Jack and Shit, because your kids are going to take those over. I don't know how many times I've watched the Flyers and Sixers on my phone because we've got Dora the Explorer, Bubble Guppies, Team Umizoomi. The Super Mario Brothers movie is currently in heavy rotation. But you got to get used to this thing, man. This is where you're going to be watching all your sports now.
Yeah, yeah. I know. But we buy these big TVs, right? Like you mentioned, 80-inch COG. I'm sure you got one that's 40 or more, right? Like we all have these big TVs and parenthood – moved much faster than my idea of parenthood. And that's why I was like, oh yeah, you know, I'll get TVs and all these other things. And I mean, I'll have to go down to the office and watch hoops, but look, it's not the end of the world, right? We get to watch and bet. And I did take Michigan State, just so you know, Coggins. Ooh. So you're not alone, my friend.
All right. Me and everyone else in the country took Michigan State.
I know.
The fighting Tom Izzo's. But that's, you know, what's beautiful about March Madness is that it's one of those things where you just like, you watch it and you enjoy it, whether you watched in a minute of Mississippi State or not. You know, it's like, what's the stupid joke about all the men scheduling the vasectomy so that they can place their private parts while they watch Long Beach State take on Akron or something? You know,
Arizona. I mean, but, yes.
Yeah. I should have timed my ankle surgery better. That's all I can tell you, you know. But I have a confession to make. I actually, you know, speaking of like how you consume games and the in-game experience versus the at-home experience. Now, I've said a lot of times where I think the at-home experience has just made leaps and bounds, has improved leaps and bounds compared to the in-game experience that you've gotten over the years, to the point where I can sit down on the 85-inch and I can put four, you know, fucking games on there, and I can put the laptop up and whatever. I was, however, thinking of going down to the Villanova NIT game last night, partly because the tickets were really cheap and they were doing the $2 beer and hot dog thing that Pagan was ripping on the site. And I'm like, yeah, this might be a good time to get, because I haven't been down to the pavilion in like forever, man. But then like the tickets were like $35. And then you got to pay your service fee. Yeah. At least like when I looked, I mean, I'm sure you could have just walked up to the whatever ticket window, if they still have ticket windows, you get something cheap. But like, that's why I like March Madness, man, because I don't, like, you're encouraged to just sit there on your ass and do that. You know, that's the best part about it, is that it's just game after game after game after game. You don't need to know anything about these teams to enjoy it.
The hardest part of today is finding True TV. Or are we past that? Like, is that joke run its course now? It's like, oh, I can't find, like, is everybody going to be Chris Russo now? I can't find this thing. Like, we all have freaking cable. Like, we all have these apps and everything. Finding True TV. I have a thing on my remote where I just push a button and say True TV, and it pops up True TV. So can we put to bed this whole, like, I don't know where True TV is anymore?
It's a race. Yeah.
Yeah, because we're all like, because we got, I got like YouTube TV. It just shows you what's there, you know?
It's a race between the, I can't find True TV, and declaring your bracket is busted after the first game. Those are the top two jokes that everyone everyone hits on during March Madness.
Yeah, it's like the guy who does the overused freezing cold takes. He does like the overused sports joke of the week, right?
Yeah, of course.
Or whatever. Well, my bracket is busted already.
Yeah, exactly. One minute into the game. Yeah.
1 minute into the game. I have to say, by the way, this is the best driving segment we've had on the show since Anthony Sanfilippo said that he said he was going to a doctor's appointment.
Right.
And he did like 50 minutes in the car with us. And I'm like, where does your doctor live? In like the Poconos or something, or the Lehigh Valley or something, where Saquon Barkley is from? Are you in Copley or however the fuck you say that?
Right.
I'm interested.
I'm South Philly to Abington, man. That's not easy. An easy drive.
Not that there is no easy drive in Philadelphia these days. There just is none. And I could segue into a whole continuation of me and Johnny Marks talking about the Sixers arena and all that. Actually, let's do that segue. Not the Sixers arena necessarily, but the Phillies came out today.
Yeah.
And they sent out a press release and they said that they're joining Comcast in the, Comcast Spectacor. I might get an email if I don't say Comcast Spectacor. They said that they're joining them to redevelop the sports complex. Great stuff, Craig here. Craig on the spot. You know, they wanted to do this, like, look, this is an answer to the Sixers wanting to go to Market Street downtown and build their arena. Comcast says, why don't you stay with us? We're going to partner with the Phillies and try to get the Eagles involved and make the sports complex a banging kind of thing. Coggin, I don't know. I don't know your opinion. What's your take on the whole sports complex thing right now?
I just don't think anything's going to happen with it. I think you're going to have a lot of bluster, a lot of talk, and then 10 years from now, we're still going to be going to games in South Philly, Sixers games in South Philly, and Phillies and Eagles games. I just don't think – I think this comes up like every couple decades, I feel like it comes up. Like, I remember when they were making plans and trying to decide where the link was going to go, there was a plan floated for downtown, and – you know, there was nothing as, you know, as permanent or as serious as this one. But I just don't think, I think there's too much against it. I especially without all the teams on board, I just feel like it's a losing battle. Like, I wouldn't mind it being downtown. I think it'd be cool. I think a lot of the worries about how you're going to get there and crime, and I think a lot of that is overblown. And I think that would mostly work itself out. But I just don't think, I don't see it happening. I don't see something of this magnitude actually happening.
Right. You wonder if it's like a, I want to call it a bluff, but just a tool to counter public, or to, to shift public opinion in the wake of the Sixers making their announcement and turning this into like an either or proposition. Like, do you want a new updated sports complex or do you want the Sixers downtown? It's not an either or thing. And it really never has been. It's an either or thing to Comcast because Comcast doesn't want the competition of, you know, the Sixers taking Greta Van Fleet, you know, live in 2032 at the 76 place. You know what I'm saying? So Comcast has a vested interest in not wanting the Sixers to leave. But for the Philadelphia sports fan, for the pragmatic Philadelphia sports fan, if that person exists, you could probably just say, why not both? How about the Sixers take all of their private money, go build their arena on Market Street and do their downtown thing? Comcast, you team up with the Eagles and the Phillies and do a cool kick-ass sports complex. I don't think it's an exercise in mutual exclusivity. I mean, not at surface value, not at surface level. I know that people are saying that Comcast wants to protect their home turf. They don't want somebody building downtown in the city that they own. But I don't see why people can't have both of these things. You get a different experience going downtown. If you don't want to get on septic because you think you're going to get mugged, okay, then don't go to the Sixers game. Go to the Flyers game instead. But I don't know. Hey, Tom, where are you at on all this?
Yeah, I actually went up to Boston with a game 5 of last year's playoff series and sat with one of the owners who was looking at doing this here and really pushing this move to Market Street. And we walked around Boston, that area. And I'll tell you this, the biggest misnomer, I think, not to say that crime and other stuff there is not something we have to talk about, but what I saw in Boston for that arena, flat downtown, there were no issues with, this was a playoff game. There were no issues with traffic.
Oh no!
Whoop! Uh oh!
Did we lose him? Oh, that's an
sudden. There's just going to be this huge jam in there. Nobody's going to be able to live or do anything. So I think that's something that I like. I like the idea because we need this. And you turn lights on, and you have a block now that has it's illuminated. There's business. It's going to be a natural deterrent. It doesn't mean that crime is going to immediately be eliminated from this area. But I think crime and traffic have been used as a major negative for the stadium downtown. There are going to be Uber lots. There are going to be Uber lanes. There are going to be, you know, they've already looked at some of the data as far as where the majority of pickups are coming from currently downtown to the Sixers games in South Philly. And it's Rittenhouse. It's Rittenhouse Square. It's those areas downtown. So they've already cleared, if it's Uber, if it's taxi lanes, things along those
lines. Oh, no. He must be
dead spots.
Yeah, there must be a dead spot in the.
Because you're going to get mugged going to a Sixers game. You're going to get mugged anywhere. You're going to get mugged going to any game. So, all right.
Well, uh-oh. Mugging is widespread. You're
right, Ken, and that Comcast right now is trying to make a play. Sorry?
Yeah, no, I was just saying you were cutting up on us a little bit, so I was trying to fill in the words a little bit for you there. But we got you.
Did I freeze?
You're kind of like coming in and out, but that's all right.
Yeah, yeah, give me.
Yeah, we got the whole, that's all right. We got the whole thought. We were able to digest the whole thought. Last thing I'll just say about this topic is like,
I'm back now.
That's all good. I think we're like, I think there's an opportunity here, honestly, for everybody to get what they want or to get something. Not what they want necessarily. Chinatown doesn't want the arena at all. Okay. But the Sixers can get their arena, build it with their private money. Comcast can upgrade their sports complex and compete with the Sixers and make it more attractive and try to get the business down there. Chinatown can receive the bulk of the $50 million in the community benefits agreement. Maybe that goes to the Stitch project to reconnect the neighborhood across 676. I just feel like there's probably like, maybe I'm naive in my pragmatism, but if every single person sat down at the table here, I'm sure we could figure this out like adults, you know? I just don't think the city is going to turn down like $1.5 billion in post-COVID private investment. And that's why I think that the arena is going to get built. But we'll see, you know? All right. Changing gears here. So the John Tortorella, Sean Couturier thing. I find it fascinating. I love this. I love the story because there's a lot of different facets to it, right? You have the benching of the captain. You have the naming of the captain. You have the fact that the team won the game the other night. They're in a playoff race. He's iced out Anthony. He was, you know, bullish with everybody in the media the other night. But let's start with what's most important. The Flyers won the damn game, right? Okay. And they looked good and they came out and they responded. Did they respond because Sean Couturier was benched? I have no clue, right? If you had told me that they, you know, were going to bench Sean Couturier and they would go and they ended up going out and losing the game, I would have told you that it was still a good idea because it was probably justified based on the way the guy played. I think too often we have this simple thought that like, oh, coach benched the player or whatever, and they responded and won, and that's why they won. No, he could have benched the guy, and it could have been the right decision.
Right.
And they could have lost a tough game 5-4 or something like that. I think too often we make it like this linear kind of thing. But the take that I settled on and was the headline of the column was John Tortorella, as long as the Flyers are winning, he can butt heads with the media. He can bench his captain. He can do whatever he wants, you know? And that's kind of where I'm at with it, Coggan. I mean, is that an oversimplification?
No, I mean, I agree with you. Isn't this just sort of Tortorella's, like, his roadmap for every team that he's coached? Where he comes in, it's a young team. He's able to sort of instill this professional mindset, you know, in the roster. He weeds out the guys he doesn't like. You know, they're going to be a great skating team because they're going to be in shape. And then by the time they get to the playoffs, you know, a lot of the team is run down, which is kind of what you're seeing with Couturier. And then, you know, it just seems like this is sort of what he does on every team that he's in, that he's ever coached. And we're sort of at the point now where it's like, okay, are they going to go on a sustained run and be successful, like maybe some of his time with the Lightning or the Rangers? Or is this going to be the point where it tips over, everyone on the team starts tuning him out, and then he's gone next year or like in a year and a half? I'm not the biggest Flyers fan. I haven't been watching every single game this season, but it just seems like this is what happens with Tortorella every single team he goes to. So I think you're sort of on this precipice now where, yeah, the team is either going to respond and go on a nice run, or everyone's going to start tuning him out, and then he's going to be gone next year.
Yeah.
I want to read something that I wrote here real quick because it's just I already put it in writing, so I might as well just read it instead of trying to remember.
Is this what the show is about? Just you repurposing your own columns to get just bump out like this? My goodness, Kevin.
We're just rehashing and recycling, and you know, it's like if I already wrote it, then why am I going to come up with a new take? Like, obviously, I believe what I. Well, that's a good question, you know, because the whole point of the show is to be able to present all the topics that we did on the site in like a different format, you know. So yes, but for this one, I'm just going to read it because I liked this particular paragraph, so I'm going to read it.
There you go. There you go. I love you, it.
quoting myself here. You can write most of this off as Torts being Torts because he was annoyed with everybody and everything on Wednesday night. But the line that jumped out to me was, "It's between Sean and I," which doesn't mesh with what Coots said earlier on Tuesday. Thank you, Craig. Now I can look at this screen and say the other one. Couturier expressed frustration with his recent treatment and said that he hasn't been given any kind of explicit direction from his head coach in terms of what he needs to improve to get back into the lineup. So in my mind, if you're going to shut down the media and keep it private between yourself and the player, that's totally fine. But this player is on the record saying that he wasn't given shit to work with. Right. For a coach that preaches responsibility and accountability and all of that, it's on you to have a real discussion with a veteran captain, because that apparently has not happened. And this is what I think the bigger concern is. If John Tortorella says, I'm not going to talk to Anthony, I'm not going to talk to Kevin Kurtz, I'm not going to talk to Charlie, he doesn't fucking say anything to the media. It doesn't matter as long as the Flyers win. But if he damages the relationship with his players to the point where what Coggan was talking about, you have a situation where you hit your peak and your valley, you know, both very quickly in succession, then we got a problem. I don't care if he talks to Anthony or not. Anthony doesn't even care. You know, he's going to keep asking the questions. It's kind of funny to see how long this game of chicken goes back and forth, to be quite honest. But that's what the key is, Eitan, right? It's like John Tortorella can say whatever he wants to us and to everybody else, but if that locker room is damaged at some point, then there's no recourse. Now you can trade. Like, people just like, oh, trade Sean Couturier. He's got like 6 years left at like $8 million or something. So I just don't think that's a thing that's going to happen.
Yeah, look, I think the biggest problem that Torts is going to run into is when things don't go well, right? And I think the biggest difference between Charlie Manuel dropping J-Roll in the lineup and someone like Sean Couturier and the nature in which this benching has happened is trust. And I don't necessarily know how deep the level of trust within that locker room runs with Tortorella. Not to say that they don't believe he's a coach, not to say that they don't believe in him, what have you. He's a coach. He's got a record. Like, he's not some new guy on the block by any means. He's got a resume. But when you do something like this, that's where schisms, that's where cracks, that's where things start to happen. And if it's just Couturier coming out and saying, I'm playing like dog shit, I need to fix some things, this is good for me, or you know, let me respond to it. But that's not what he said. And it sounds like, on the outside at least, or maybe just coming from Coots himself, it sounds like this was just, you're playing like shit, get out of my face, I'm dropping you. And it wasn't conveyed. And that's where I think professionals look around and say, hey man, I'm doing my thing, I'm fine. And if you're open to coaching, and if you're open to constructive criticism, you want that, right? Like, some people only work when they're getting the whip cracked on them, or they're getting extra pressure on them. So I think there needs to be that level of communication. And again, I'm only going on what Couturier said, but I think that's pretty damning that he would come out in a public setting and give that quote, which is, I have no idea what I need. It's not that I didn't know why I got benched, right? There's a difference. It's not, why did I get benched? This is bullshit. It's, I don't know what to do to get back. I don't know what, he has not told me. It's not something specific in that regard. That's where I think there's a major issue brewing. But let's be fair. This team keeps winning. They keep playing ridiculously over their head. It's not going to factor in. But we saw as early as what, week 13 or so with the Eagles, all that goodwill, all that good nature went to complete shit when something goes into a tailspin. So Tortorella is walking a pretty fine line right now, and I wonder how that thing changes, because Ant and other guys asking questions, they ain't going anywhere. They're going to keep asking these questions, and they're going to be on them, and it's going to get even worse, Kev, if things do start coming back to kind of the ground, if you will.
Well, I'm sure you guys saw this, Coggin, where the thing the other night, Anthony asked the first question, and then he gets shut down, and then Kevin Kurtz immediately asks the same thing right after that. And it's not some big organ. They don't all get together in a huddle before the press conference. Okay, you're going to ask this and you're going to ask that. like it's like he's looking like Anthony's got his like wrist thing. He's like, all right, we're calling this play. And then if we get to fourth and two, we're doing the tush push, you know? Play that, Craig.
That's great.
John, can you take us through your decision to... That's right, somebody else will ask it.
John, was there any effect, do you think, with pulling Sean Couturier from the lineup? What were you looking for from the team?
As I told you, I'm putting the players out on the ice to win a particular game, and these were the 20 that we decided to go with. I'm not talking on Sean. I'm not debating with you. I'm not conversing with you. It's between Sean and
I. The next one. Here's the next.
Talking about the game, guys.
Sean was out. How do you think the team responded, especially?
It has nothing to do with Sean being out. You asking me about the team?
How did they respond in your eyes?
Our team played good tonight.
Yeah. So don't ask me about Sean. Anyway, in terms of Sean Couturier, it's like everybody. Look, it's just funny, man, because I know that there's a larger level topic here of like a lot of people in Philadelphia, a lot of sports fans, a lot of people all across the country don't give a flying shit about the media these days. And I get that, you know, and a lot of that comes from, let's be honest, we don't cut corners on the show. I don't beat around the bush. When Trump came out and did the enemy of the people thing and all that shit, there was like a wave of anti-media sentiment. Of course, we got to do better. We got to help ourselves, you know, but it's very trendy, I think, right now for people to dislike the media. And that's not just, you know, CNN and Fox News, whatever the fuck. It's like us as well. You know, we're kind of media. Sure. We're kind of not media. But there are a lot of people who say, I don't care what Torts says to the media. If they go out and win and he makes the right decisions, fine. And benching Sean Couturier, I mean, like, why should the captain be treated? Should the captain be treated any differently than any other player on the team? If you've only had one goal and three assists going back to the new year, then yeah, you're a candidate for benching just like anybody else. It's like, goes back to what I said before though. It's like, you got to be communicative about it. I know that Torts has this thing. Torts has this thing where he likes players to come to him and talk to him and challenge him and knock on his figurative door or whatever. That's fine with Morgan Frost. But I mean, Sean Couturier has been here for forever and he's been playing in the NHL forever. You don't treat veterans the same way that you treat you know, the second year, the third year kid. So I don't know, Coggin, is that like,
Couturier has never really had that type of a reputation where he's going to come out and publicly rip a coach's decision. I mean, he seems like a pretty stoic guy, doesn't really complain to the media a whole lot about decisions that are being made. So that kind of rang, you know, a bit of an alarm bell where he's like Eitan said, you know, he's had his ice time decreased, you know, and he's basically saying like, well, I don't know what I have to do. I mean, obviously he knows. I mean, he knows that he should start producing more, but if Tortorella is not even saying like, look, we're going to restart reducing your ice time every game because you're not playing good defense, you're not getting back, you know, to forecheck, you know, you're not doing this. And he's sort of saying, well, all I'm seeing is repercussions for something that I don't even know what I'm doing incorrectly. It just seems like, you know, Couturier is not like the type of guy that would just popped off for no apparent reason. So something is obviously rubbing him the wrong way. I thought he handled the whole situation poorly, especially not addressing it in the afternoon media session.
Sending Rocky Thompson out there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know what's going to come up. Like, you might not want to talk about it after the game, but he's the captain. You're scratching him. He's getting healthy scratched. Like, yeah, you made the decision. It's time for you to talk and explain why you made that decision. Like, you might not want to do it after the game, but do it in the afternoon press availability, and you're not going to be annoyed by Anthony asking you the question after, you know, you win that night. So,
yeah, I don't know. That was good pragmatic Flyers talk. I've always said that you get the best Flyers talk on this program.
Right.
All right, switching gears. And Eitan, whenever you got to go, man, because we don't, you know, I don't even think we discussed a time frame for the show. So whenever you got to hop, just hop.
I figured you would either tell me my time's up or the show would end, like one of the two. So
as you can see, we just kind of wing it here, you know. Usually we go like 30 minutes with guests, but whenever you stay as long as you want, man, all right? All right, so let's talk about the Fanatic.
I can't leave talking Flyers.
Well, at least stay through this. Hang on, we got a super chat here. Connor Allen's paying $5 to get you to sit down on a chair and stay seated.
I love you, Connor. You know Kincaid's just gonna steal that money anyway, go for more Motorhead shirts.
Can I be honest with you? I know nothing about the super chat. I don't know where the money goes. I don't know who set it up. I'm sure there's like $11 in some account somewhere that I need to report to the finance department in Cyprus, but I don't know like where it is or what it is. So I'll add it to my whiteboard with a list of topics to follow. Like, why did Jamie Apodi leave, just disappear off the face of the earth? You know,
somehow it's all going to Russ. Russ is getting it somehow.
It's going to Joy Media LLC. Yeah. Let's check those 1099s there. I think we need to do we got to get Sal Pal to do the forensic investigation on whether Russ Joy is stealing funds from XL Media and Crossing Broad here. Before this goes completely off the rails, like any show that Eitan and Coggin are involved with. So the new Fanatic lineup is official. They announced it on Friday. They started it today. The big blockbuster was that Mike Missanelli might be coming back. And when somebody told me about that, I was like, for real? You know, I normally, when I report things, like you like to get like traditionally, like in old school, it was like you get three sources to tell you something, then you go with it. If I know the person or if they're solid, I'll do like one or two or whatever. Missanelli coming back was like a three source thing for me because, like, I don't believe this shit. Why would he come back? I mean, he left under like disastrous terms not even 2 years ago. So, why would he come back now? And why would he do the midday show? That's what they were going to do, slot him in with Bob Cooney, I guess, in the midday show. So, you'd have John Kincaid and Andrew Salchunas in the morning. So, you'd have Bob and Mike middays, and then Best Show Ever would stay the same in the afternoon. And then Pat Egan would do 6 to 10. Personally, man, I'd be stunned if Mike goes back, but you tell me.
Go ahead, Cock.
Isn't it just a detriment to the Fanatic at this, or it's a commentary on how irrelevant the Fanatic is that they're considering bringing back Mike Missanelli after this horrible exit he had, what was it, 2 or 3 years ago?
It was 2022. It was May of 2022. Okay. Yeah.
So he left on terrible terms. I mean, I remember listening to that show, his final show. He was like in tears, basically like, I'm getting fired. Like they gave me no, you know, they gave me no heads up about this. This is my farewell show. Like he obviously didn't want to leave. And then now 2 years later, the Fanatic is like, we've got nothing else. Our shows right now stink and we are getting crushed by WIP. Missinelli was obviously the only, you know, impactful host they've pretty much, I mean, Gargano too, I suppose, but he's long gone and he's not coming back. So it's like Missinelli's the only guy that ever drew ratings for you. So now basically you're saying we fucked up. Please come back and host a midday show with us. And it just, it shows you just it what dire straits they're in right now and just what little ideas they have to try anything new. It's just like, this is their Hail Mary. This is their absolute Hail Mary to be relevant in Philadelphia again. They're getting slaughtered by WIP in every time slot. And, you know, no offense, but like the best damn show ever or whatever that drive time show is, that ain't going to turn things around. Like, sorry, like Tyrone and Ricky Bo, they're not going to draw more ears. Like Missinelli is it for them. Like this is all they have left. It's pathetic if you think about it.
Yeah. You said a lot. Pretty much everything I agree with wholeheartedly. In my experience, and even after just looking at things, the midday slot on 97.5 has been routinely neglected. If it's through promotion, if it's through ratings, if it's just through the show itself. So that, I think, speaks even more to kind of how crazy and in flux this whole situation is for the Fanatic, where they already have two shows locked in, if you will, on the drive times, yet those shows are hemorrhaging right now, and they don't have the means and opportunity to move Mike anywhere else if he were to come back. So you're taking your Hail Mary, and you're, instead of making it on the 50-yard line, you've now moved yourself back to your own 20, and that's how much more ground you have to cover, because he is now going to be in a slot. Now, the only thing I would agree with is, oh, well, you know, the AM show and the PM show, they're doing great. So this is an opportunity now to build on our lead at IP. It's not happening. Those shows are getting crushed. So that's where I think this becomes more a matter of desperation and staying relevant than anything else. I don't know the situation. I don't want to speak for it. I can't, right? But clearly whatever he was doing was not enough to fill that void or that gap. And just like me or anybody else who's done a lot of time on the radio, you have that void. Like, I'm fine. I'm not trying to angle for a job on the Fanatic right now, trust me. But there is that void. And I think it's so close to Mike leaving that, yeah, why not? Come back and do your show. But from the Fanatic standpoint, this has been a battle where they have, outside of maybe like a few times, they have not really over the last 10, 15 years been able to compete. Now, they're going to make money because the cluster over there makes money. You've got MMR, you've got MGK. Yep. Money comes in, don't get me wrong. But the reality is that I think what's caught up to them is their inability to see the landscape of radio and develop. And I love Andrew, and I think he's going to do fantastic. And I back that kid to the day in which he retires. So this is not a knock on anybody specific. Salchunas is one of the few people that I think has grown and risen through that rank. But the reality is that they don't. They don't have someone they can go to and say, hey, man, this is our next guy. This is our next up-and-coming guy. This is our next star. And I don't know if they believe that with Andrew, even, to be honest with you. Like, this is our next star, that we've homegrown a star. IP is so much over there as far as the stable is concerned. They have the namesake. They have the reputation. They don't need to jam and force stuff. This feels very contrived. It feels very forced. And ultimately, I agree with you, Cog. It feels like a sense of desperation here. But again, you're trapped in the midday slot. And Kev, you know, just from following ratings and following from things, that has been a neglected time slot for whatever reason at the Fanatic. So this is now a multiple uphill battle that you're climbing.
Well, and I think you touched on some important things there. Number one, middays. I think midday numbers are always going to be a little bit lower than mornings and afternoons because sure. they're not drive time, you know, slots, obviously, as you know, like, you know, PM drive and AM drive are the most important because, you know, schlubs like me are sitting in our car stuck on 76.
Absolutely.
You know? But, you know, to that point, like if Mike's going to come back and do middays, where is WIP the weakest? I guess that midday show, right? And Joe and Hugh still pull like an 8 or a 9 or a 10 various books, which is a strong number in a vacuum, but it's not the 17 or 18 that, you know, Marks and Reese or the morning show is pulling, right? So if you want to be competitive there, yeah, go there. The other thing too, is I think something that you touched on, like a lot of people don't really think about, you don't need to win Nielsen ratings to sell, to make money. And I think when they had that stretch, even after some of the guys left, or Mike Missinelli was in PM drive and Gargano was doing middays, John Kincaid was new in mornings, they had enough clout with those guys in the sponsorship world where you can make money and you can sell Pella doors and windows, you know, without having to have a 17 share. You know what I'm saying? Like you can make money and do that. And I've been doing this long enough. I know enough people. I've talked to enough people, Eitan. You can probably corroborate this where Beasley doesn't think that they need to beat WIP.
Oh no,
they don't. But they need to get back to where they were 5 or 6 years ago, right? They don't see defeating WIP as something that they have to do because the strength of the cluster with Preston and Steve and MGK and all these other their cluster, I think, is more healthy, honestly, in Philadelphia than Odyssey's cluster. Well, Odyssey just went fucking bankrupt, so of course it is, you know. But the strength of the combined Fnatic and MMR and MGK and the Country Station next to you versus like WIP and KYW News Radio and 1210 PhD. BC's cluster is strong, man. So they just got to get back to where they were, man. I don't think they have to beat WIP, and I don't think management thinks that they have to beat WIP. You know, I think they just need to be competitive again and respectable again. And
what competitive?
What level of competitive?
Yeah, like what would you define competitive? Or how?
At least like making WIP feel like there's another station in town to the point where, like, you know, John and Ike and Mike were exchanging books back and forth for a little bit. And, you know, their numbers were up in the 5 or 6 range. At least you can sell advertising with a 5 share or a 6 share, you know. WIP, I want everybody to understand the WIP's numbers are like astronomical. That is not, those are not normal numbers in other Nielsen radio markets. Like it is very rare for shows to be doing like that kind of those kinds of numbers. There are other markets where you get like a 4 share and you're like number one, you know.
Kevin, so, at his height, at Missinelli's height, when he was the, you know, the prime time drive time guy at Fnatic, what was he pulling? Like what was he like bringing in ratings wise? Do you remember?
Eights and nines, Eitan? Yeah. Does that sound right?
Yeah. So at his height, he was touching what Hugh Douglas and Giglio do right now with WIP, which is what we've said, like their lowest show.
Well, that's so correct. Yeah, at the same time, too, I mean, you have to think that a lot of the people in the Nielsen program, if they're not going to Fnatic, they're either going between Fnatic. I don't know how many people leave sports to go listen to like MGK. I don't know what the cross section is between people who are leaving that, but like, how many? The question everybody should be asking themselves is, how many rating share points exist for sports in this market? Like, are there 20 share points in the morning? Are there 20 in the afternoon? Like, you know, what are listener habits, you know, across the day? And, you know, Fnatic just needs to get up. They're doing like 2s and 3s and 4s right now. If they get into the 5 or 6 range, they're fine. Yeah, nothing wrong with that. You can sell that to advertisers, you know?
It's hard, right? Yeah. Sorry, Cog.
No, go for it.
I just think it's very difficult to pull out of a rut in radio. If you are doing 2s and 3s and you still have the same show, it's really hard to increase to double your ratings. Like you need gimmick. You need something. You need a promotion. You need something along those lines to happen. You know, we're giving away $1,000 five times a day. And that, you know, like you need to incentivize people because the reality is you're stuck in this rut. So I think absolutely the midday is going to get a bump. Let's be honest. Any new show, we saw that with Innes, we saw that with anybody. Like any new show is going to get an immediate 2.5 to 3 month bump just for being a new show. Mike's going to bring that bump, absolutely. But I think the problem now, and this speaks about what you're saying, Kevin, because I agree with you you lost the strategy. Just you have to, especially asking shows that are struggling mightily right now to increase, to double their numbers. And outside of IP, just taking a tailspin, what changes? That's my question, is what changes with that PM drive show? I don't know what it is. I don't listen to it, but I just hear and see that a lot of people don't like it. So how does that change without changing personnel? They already fired a guy, right, on that show. What about the morning show? You keep moving. You keep switching. I think the problem with the Fanatic is that they are so overreactionary. Look at the turmoil and look at the change that you've seen from hosts. There's no consistency. And when you do have consistency, it's a bad show. So what happens? You're basically busted on both ends right now, where you can't get anything off the ground. And when you do, it has a nice little bump, but then it dips. And now all of a sudden you're like, well, we got to make changes. We got to make changes. They constantly make changes. They constantly are changing the lineup. They're constantly shifting and rotating. So even when there isn't any consistency, you get shit. And when there is consistency, we're back in this question here, which is, hey, how do you move a show that's getting a 2 rating to a 4 to a 4.5? Because Kincaid, you're probably more right than not, which is if they all got in like that 4 to 5 range, Fanatic's like, all right, we're good. We're good. Like, we're making money. We're fine. Exactly. But I don't know how you get there.
Yeah, I last point on this too, and then I'll let you go.
My kid just went all over the floor.
Oh, okay. Well, that's apt then. They're like Fanatic, I think, is kind of like us when I was at Eyewitness News, where what did Action News do? I've used this analogy 100 times on the show, but it makes sense. Like, what has Action News done over the last 50 years? They've done nothing. Same people, same show, same formula, whatever. And it's grandfathered in into a market that's very provincial and very parochial. What is meantime, Eyewitness News is like, let's change the desk again. Let's go from square mic flags to triangle mic flags. That'll get everybody to start watching again, you know? And to that point, it's like when I listen to WIP, I know what I'm getting. I know I'm getting some guy who's going to lead the show. There's going to be a Philadelphia Eagle sitting next to him, and I'm going to be bludgeoned to death with the Philadelphia Eagles. But it works, and they do it, and they have an identity, and they have a brand, and they've been doing that for years now. And the Fanatic, I don't know what their brand is. I don't know what their identity is. I think they've got some decent talent, but this amounts to just rearranging that talent into different shows. And so, everybody wants to do the joke about the Titanic or whatever. I won't do that because I'm a nice guy. But ultimately, you're trying to do the same thing with just different guys in different slots, you know? Right. So you have to bring in a Miss Sinelli. And they told everybody at some meeting that they had that if it's, you know, they're going to add somebody with Bob. If it's Mike, okay. If it's not, it's going to be somebody else. But, my whole point is just like, if I was program director of the Fanatic, I'd be like, we got to establish like a brand. I know what Crossing Broad's brand is. Crossing Broad, we're going to do goofy, fun stuff that nobody else does, but we're going to be smart. We're going to give you facts and information at the same time. WIP, there's going to be a friggin' former Eagle in that chair. You know, we're going to smash you in the head with the Eagles. And like in Action News, it's like, I'm going to toss to Dan Cuellar and he's going to give us the big story of the day. And we're going to do that for 50 years, you know? So that's my final point on that.
Same thing. Yeah. I agree. I'll get out of here on this note too, which is, it's the same thing at 29. Like, I know every time I'm down there, I know what good day is. I know what's going to happen, which I don't know, which is the beauty of it too. And I think the problem that the Fanatic runs into, and I'll use a radio analogy here, is the leader is playing the hits. The leader is playing whatever the hits, the classic rock hits, the number one or two songs that come from an album. The Fanatic is stuck trying to say, well, okay, do we play the hits? Because that's clearly what everybody wants. Or do we play deep cuts? And if you play deep cuts and you go off the path and you go different than what Philadelphia radio is accustomed to, you run the risk of people saying, I'm not used to this. I want my Eagles. I want this and that. And, you know, like you run the risk of this and all of a sudden you're even in a worse spot. They are simply afraid to take a risk. And I'll leave you with that.
Well, thanks, man. Appreciate you coming on. Appreciate the insight as always.
Yeah, this is great, man. You know, I appreciate you. I thought you forgot who I was.
No,
I haven't heard from you in ages.
I've got this like
I'm a regular.
Hey, yeah. There you go, baby.
I've got this list of like 100 guests that I went through. Actually, I went through the first year and a half after we brought the show back. I went through and I wrote down every single guest that we had on the show. And there were some that were like obvious. I'm like, I've never had Eitan. I haven't had Eitan. You know, like I haven't had Bruno. So
You were right behind Tyrone Johnson and Ricky Bitalica. Right
there you go. Anything for you guys. I love it. Thanks, guys.
Right. Peace,
see ya. Hey, dude.
Oh boy. Speaking of music, I would like to hear a Workforce block of Judas Priest. I'm gonna call Brent Porsche once we get off the show here.
Oh, Judas Priest. Yeah, you were raving about their new album, huh? Oh
god, we should pull some of it up and play some of it. Watch the numbers drop drastically. Hey Craig, if you have that Phillies graphic from the divisional thing, can you prepare that for me? It was the hypothetical. I'm going to make an executive choice on the show here today, Coggan.
Please.
We're not going to get it back to the Eagles.
No, please don't.
I have nothing to say about the Eagles. This is why I can never do WIP, because if I had to come in today and like concoct some fucking Hassan Reddick take, I'm like, I don't know. Maybe they trade him. Maybe they don't.
You don't have big thoughts on them signing Paris Campbell today?
Oh, did they? I didn't even see
it. Yeah, it happened like right before the show started.
Oh, of course it did. Yeah, Paris Campbell. I have no thought, but I'm sure Elliot does, because he can concoct anything out of nothing, you know? So Elliot Short Parks, by the way, I'm going to go on the record and say this. Everybody laughs at Elliot for his I could luck into a home run tweet or whatever that was, right? You know, I have actually played sports with Elliot, and he's pretty good.
Really?
He can actually play. Yeah, I played soccer, but I played at the Union media game not last like 2 years ago or something, and Elliot knew what was up. So I haven't seen him play any other sport.
I mean, the differences between soccer and baseball though are, I mean, look, everyone knows he's saying it because it's a joke. Yeah. It gets engaged. I mean, pretty much everything he says is for engagement and to get people riled up, and I find myself eating the trash more often than not when he's spouting some nonsense about rather having Ben Simmons than Tyrese Maxey and all that.
That nonsense was actually a good one though, because it made me think, because I was like, actually scoring in hockey would probably be the easiest one, because you would just plant your ass in front of the net. You'd get knocked over in like 2 seconds, but at some point a puck would probably like deflect off your ass and go in the, you know, if anybody ever seen Scott Hartnell score a goal before, then That would be the easiest one.
What was his what was easier, to hit a home run, score a touchdown, score a goal, or what was the basketball one? Just make a shot in a game, or
yeah, maybe hit a 3-pointer or something. I don't know. I think hitting the shot, right, because you could just heave it from half court before Patrick Beverley even gets close to you, or maybe he's hounding you full court. I don't know, but I think hockey would be the easiest because like, inevitably something would like deflect off of you, and you don't even have to know how to skate or anything. You could just be a net front with Wayne
Simmons. I think they'd be able to clear him out from anywhere in front of the net pretty easily. So, you know, he'd have to have something like, he'd have to be curled up into a ball on like the corner of the boards, and someone would have to like ricochet a shot off of his dome. I think he'd have the best chance at basketball, just because you could get you could literally get the ball, turn around and shoot it over your head, you know, and just hope that goes in. I think it's not going to happen either way, any of those things, but you know, whatever. We're falling for the trap again.
I know, we're falling for the trap. It's good. It makes for good radio though, or good StreamYard shows, I should say. Let's do another hypothetical, Craig, if you can pull that up, and we can talk about, let's get it back to the Phillies with a baseball hypothetical. So, expansion is coming to MLB at some point. I don't know where they're going. For this, Jim Bowden did a hypothetical here. We love a good hypothetical on the show. And he said, you know, if MLB expands with Charlotte and Nashville, this is how divisions could be realigned. I love a good division realignment hypothetical. So he's got an Eastern Conference and a Western Conference. I can already hear Phillies fans grumbling through the podcast feed. But in the Eastern Conference East, the ECE, he's got the Red Sox, the Yankees, the Mets, and the Phillies, and I fucking love it. I absolutely love it. Take the Marlins, get them out of here. I'm like Trump at one of his rallies. Get them out of here. Take the Nationals, get them out of here. Take the Braves, get them out of here. I would love a division where the Phillies played the Mets, the Yankees, and the Red Sox consistently, because you have four of the best fan bases in Major League Baseball there. The parks would be rocking, man. There would be no summer lull. There would be no natitude where, you know, you watch an empty Phillies playing in an empty stadium in Washington, or playing in a nothing stadium in Miami, you know, road trip to Boston, go up to Fenway, you know, you know, bump elbows with the mass holes up there, you know, go to the Bronx and, you know, mingle with their disgusting fans. I love it, man. I think it'd be hyper region. I think it'd be awesome. I think like, these four fan bases care about baseball like more than anything, man. So let the dumb franchises go be dumb and let the Braves and their SEC fans go to the Southeast. Let them play the Marlins and the Rays and the Charlotte expansion team or the Nashville team or whatever. I love it, man. I would love to see meaningful baseball with all that. Yeah.
It's a good, this is the only pause that I have with this. And yeah, I mean, there'd be a crazy hyper-local Eastern Conference or division, whatever the hell you're going to call it. That division is far and away, just from looking at it, that'd be far and away the most competitive division in this realignment here. Because you have four teams that spend a crap ton of money. And they all, every year they have playoff aspirations. That's not going to change. Like, is there any other division in that realignment that comes close to the height of these teams? I mean, maybe the Southwest with Houston and Texas and the Cardinals.
Yeah.
Like the KC Cardinals would bring that
down, though. The Royals would bring that down into the basement.
Yeah. Maybe it seems like every other division has like, I mean, maybe the West division with the Diamondbacks, the Dodgers, and the Padres are all good, but the Angels, they stink. They don't spend money.
The only thing I would do that too, I would take the West and the Pacific Coast, and I would put the Diamondbacks and douchebag Jimmy Eat World drummer. They can go into the Pacific Coast Conference with Gonzaga and the Rockies and the A's and the Mariners. I would have the Padres, the Dodgers, and the Giants and the Angels in that one, because I don't think you can split up the Dodgers and Giants rivalry. You know, we'd lose out on too many stabbings if that was the case, you know?
Yeah. I think in the name of fairness, every division needs to at least have one tomato can, one punching bag. There are no punching bags in that East division.
Yeah.
Maybe the Red Sox now, because they, you know, but you can't think that they're going to stay bad for a long time.
Well, and that's the funny thing too, because somebody said to me, they're like, you wouldn't want to do that. It's murderer's row. The Phillies would be last place every year. I'm like, motherfucker, the Phillies are the best team in that division right now. This hypothetical division we're talking about. But you're right, Cog. It's like the average payroll be like $500 million.
It is. I mean, the Yankees, the Phillies, and the Mets spend money like crazy. I mean, the Red Sox have had a couple down years, and I don't think they're going to have a great year this year, but I mean, that team, I mean, like, you're going to have 60% of the free agents going to that division every single year. I mean, all the high priced free agents anyway, it's just like, that is a tough, tough division. It would be cool to see, you know, the Red Sox and the Yankees coming here more, that's a tough one.
Well, I think the payrolls in that division, we'd be on like the 47th luxury tax threshold immediately, and John Middleton would be trying to get down to the 46th, you know, luxury. You need to sell a lot of cigars, man, to pay for all those players. But
a lot of black and milds.
So if Russ was on the show, or if Russ was running the show, we would go for like another 40 minutes here and we'd go through the whole rundown. I don't feel like we have to do that. No. I don't know. What's on your mind? I'll let you pick the final topic. What do you want to end on here?
Huh.
What's top of mind for the Cog and Toboggan right now?
Man, we talked a lot about shameless plug. Let's go to the phone. Do you have any good, like, any good March Madness memories of, like, because I think we all agreed that the peak of March Madness for any of us was college, getting home, you know, Thursday, Friday, first round of the tournament. Yeah. Drinking your face off with your friends in a dorm room, going out at night. What, if any, do you have? Like, what memories do you have of March Madness that really stick out in your mind?
Well, I was very fortunate to be at West Virginia when the basketball team was very good, and we went on that kind of miracle run with Kevin Pitsnoggle.
Remember
the tattooed white guy, the goofy white guy? He's the teacher now, and like he went back to his hometown or something to West Virginia as a teacher there. But we went to the Elite Eight that year and we beat Chris Paul's Wake Forest.
There you go.
I remember, he was a senior at Wake Forest. Yeah, it was like a what were we, like a 7 seed and they were a 2? I think we beat us. I think we beat them in the 7-2, and I think we beat like Bob Knight and Texas Tech. I think it was like 2006 or something. And it was just funny because that team was a bunch of just goofballs. We had like a 7-foot white redneck dude from West Virginia. We had a German exchange student. We had John Beilein's son was on the team.
Okay, all right.
We had a white guy who had like the baggy, wore the baggy t-shirt under him. He's now like the assistant general manager for the Cleveland Cavaliers. And then we had like one black guy on the team. It was really good, but it was just such a goofy ass team. And like, honestly, man, I think the sad thing about March Madness is like, you know, this is the second straight year in a row that this is pathetic, isn't it? We didn't even mention this. Like, we're an hour into the show. We didn't even mention that there's no Philly team in March Madness.
Yeah.
I watched Nova pitifully lose at home to VCU last night. And, you know, obviously, like, when I was at Eyewitness News, like, we have these good stories, like, you know, Tyrone Garland goes on a run and Southwest Philly Floater. We got Dr. John on the Sports Zone or whatever. And like, we don't have those now locally. So I don't give a shit. I got a Philadelphia sports site to run and there's a lot of stuff going on. And the further away I am from graduation, I've been out of college for like 17 years now or whatever. Right.
Yep,
same with you, man. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't have that connection to the college basketball team that I, you know, was with at my alma mater, you know? So, I just think that's the thing, man. It's like, you don't have like those stories that are like local to you, man. I love just like going home and sitting there doing nothing, putting all the games on. I don't know anything about Long Beach State, but I'm going to watch them anyway, you know?
Exactly. Temple gave us a good story for a week and a half with the allegations of throwing games and then going on a run to the conference championship, which was awesome for like all of 5 days or whatever. But then, outside of that, like Villanova shit the bed. Drexel started off really well in the season and then they shit the bed in their tournament. Temple was awful.
Like, St. Joe's is probably the best team like overall, and those guards are pretty good. I watched a little bit of them playing Seton Hall in the gym last night. Did you see any of the shots of the St. Joe's Seton Hall game? Seton Hall, I guess, usually plays in the Prudential Center, but they played in like their home gym, like the Walsh Gymnasium. It looked like my high school gym. There was like 1,100 people. It was kind of cool, man. It was like, it looked like ECW one night stand with like a very low, like
the Hammerstein Ballroom. Exactly.
It looked like the Hammerstein Ballroom. Craig, it's called the Walsh Gymnasium, I think. But I pictured like Paul Heyman was going to walk out on the floor and start yelling at a JBL or something like that. Yeah, this is where they played their NFL game last night.
Nice.
Right? It looks like, that looks like the gym where like Moravian plays or something.
Yeah,
like
that Ryder.
Ryder. Yeah. So it looks like a Bucknell special.
Exactly.
It sucks
without having, you know, you could always count on Nova to be a top 3 seed for years. Like you could count on, you know, I'll date myself a little bit, but you could count on Temple and John Chaney to be in as like, you know, a 5 seed, a 5 to a 10 seed every year make a run to the Sweet 16. It just stinks now because, like, Villanova was so pathetic this year. They have to fire Neptune, right? Like, he's gone. It's got to be gone.
They got cooked. I was watching that game, number one, because I wanted to hear my guy Dave Leno on the call, and number two, because I have money on Nova, stupidly, right? And I was like, well, the favorites aren't going to be motivated. Let me alternate spread them down to like 2.5. I think they'll win, but they'll look shitty doing it. And of course, I hit 3 out of 4 on the round robin, so I lost my like $4 like I normally do, you know? But they had like a VCU's coach just like abused them on the sideline inbound play at the end of the game where a dude was like wide open. I think VCU had 2 wide open dunks in like the last 2 minutes, and Neptune just doesn't look like he's like there.
No,
he just kind of is like on the sidelines. Like, he's not, is he into the game? Is he paying attention? Is he coming up with like what's going on in his head? You know,
they quit. They quit on it. I mean, I just don't think you can't go from Jay Wright to this. You know, it's pathetic how far they've fallen off. And it doesn't look like it's getting any better anytime soon. So like, they got to cut ties with the guy. They got to bring in somebody who is at least, you know, can motivate a team, can motivate his roster, because it just looked like they quit. It looked like they didn't give a crap about the NIT game. And then, you know, they had you know, they made a nice, a little bit of a run in their conference tournament, but it just, the whole year was just, man, they were just, they did not even come close.
Nothing they ever did. Nothing they ever did was like, I got anybody to say like, oh, okay, I think something's going to happen now. It never got to that point for me. Admittedly, watching from afar as a casual, you know, most of it I see through the lens of Villanova hater Kyle Pagan, who's just thumping Temple, slurping Temple nonstop, you know? But I know we're living in an NIL world right now, but there's no excuse for the five teams, the six teams to not make the tournament for two straight seasons. I mean, that's a fucking debacle for as big as college basketball and high school basketball is in this region. And like, we got to figure something out. Maybe we fold the big five into three teams, maybe make it a big three, just kill a couple programs here and try to keep the talent somewhere else. I don't know. I'm just speaking off the cuff here, but it's pretty pathetic that we're, you know, not even that there's nothing there, you know? So
no, it's bad. It's bad, yeah. Man. It's just not fun to watch any of the Philly teams right now. There's just no talent. Villanova should have talent, but for whatever reason, like they weren't able to harness any of it. I mean, it would just seem like Neptune couldn't put these guys in a system that would work, that would make anything work. I mean, that was always sort of Jay Wright's, you know, biggest strength was he could recruit.
The strength of the concepts.
Yeah. He had great concept. He had a great system. He knew how to put guys in the right position to really get everything out of them. And it just always seems like Neptune's trying to put these guys, for lack of a better term, these square peg guys into a round hole. So
we're going to wrap it up here in a minute, but I think we have a little bit of breaking news we can end the show on.
Oh.
According to Anthony DeMarco and other people on Twitter, it sounds like Sean Couturier will once again be scratched tonight.
Sure, whatever.
So here's my only, we don't need to rehash all this shit again, but my only thing is like, I think when he benched Hazy, and Atkinson at I don't know what they call I think they came right back into the lineup immediately. I think they were only one game scratches, right? So Ford is saying correct. This is why I'm glad we have Ford here, you know, because he can fact check me on this stuff. So that's curious. Two straight health bombs for Sean Couturier Coots.
He's got to address the media now. I mean, you've done it two games in a row. I mean, will he? That's going to be the big question now. I mean, even more so as to why, but will he address the media and actually say, yeah, you know, he's got scratched twice in a row?
Yeah. I'm not one of those people, and I don't think you are either. And I'm like, oh, he needs to talk to the media. You have to come talk to the media. Wow. You know, whatever. I don't think we're that important. You know, I think the self-importance in the sports journalism world is disgusting. But if he doesn't want to talk to us, at least, like, I don't know. It's to me, it's like the fans should know, like, the thinking behind this. And like, if you're gonna bench your captain, just fucking talk about it. It's not that big of a deal, you know.
It's a story now, and it's almost like, because Couturier is now, he is the longest tenured Flyer now, right?
Since 2011. Yeah.
All right. So he's been in the city for years. He's the captain. You've healthy scratched him twice now. Like, I think in as much, you know, you don't owe it to the media, but maybe you owe it to him or to just address it, not try and sweep it under the rug again. Two straight games. I think now is the time that you have to at least say something.
Yeah, I think so too. And I just think it's like, you know, because there was a theory going around for a little bit that this wasn't Tort's decision, you know, that it was like the front office saying, let's name a captain and have a kumbaya feel good moment here, you know, and send out the press release and all that horse shit. Right. But, you know, if this was indeed Torts' decision to put the C on Coots, perhaps maybe to get him going, then it's like a Howie Roseman 2021 kind of thing to me, because it's like, how much credit do you get for fixing your own mistakes? Like, now he's correcting, giving them the C obviously did not work. It was not the right decision. So now you got to own that. You got to correct that. You know what I'm saying? That's why it's like the thing. That's why I can't give Coots give Torts a ton of like all of the credit in the world for it, even though I think he should be higher in the Jack Adams odds, quite honestly. He's like seventh or eighth right now.
Yeah.
But because your first move didn't work, which predicated the second move.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So
yeah, I could see that. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's just, I think the longer it doesn't, the longer someone, the longer he doesn't address it, the more of a story it becomes and the more distracting it can potentially get. So I think, I think you have to, I think you at least, you have to at least, you can't be like, shoot down the first reporter that asks a question about it and be like, I'm not talking about it again. Like, I think you at least have to give it a cursory type of comment in the least. Like, he knows what he has to work on. We talked, I'll leave it at that. Something like that. You know,
you're annoyed at having to talk about the situation that you yourself created. So
yeah, exactly. Like, you're getting mad, you know, you're getting, you saw the look of disgust on his face when Anthony asked a question and then the next reporter asked a question about Couturier. It's like, you can't get pissed off when they're asking questions for, like you just said, for a story that you created, basically. Like, you got to address it.
I think they're on the road tonight. I think they're playing in Carolina, so Anthony's not going to be down there. I would love for Anthony to just try to ask the question again. We think we need to get to the point where, like, Tortorella just walks over to Anthony and he clubs him with his cast, and then it's Italian on Italian crime there or something. You know? But all right, interesting. Well, we'll see what happens with that, and we'll leave it at that. I'm about to go put $20 on some team I've never watched before. But that's the beauty of March Madness, isn't it?
I'm mad for March Madness. Although I do, let's see. Michigan State is up by 7 at halftime. Beautiful.
And Ford says Anthony's in San Francisco. So we'll leave you with that. Happy betting, everybody. Thanks for joining us, Cog. Thanks for jumping on.
Thank you
to everybody. We're always glad to have everybody. We appreciate you. We appreciate the listeners. We appreciate Rush Joy, the white Marcus Hayes. Thanks to Eitan and Shander for coming on. And we will see you next time.
Peace.